Welcome to Veterinary Advice, Animal News, and Views, the place for pets and the people who love them.
Here, kitty, kitty, kitty.
Here are your hosts, practicing veterinarians Dr. Roger Welton and Dr. Karen Lewis.
Hello, thanks for listening to another episode of Veterinary Advice, Animal News, and Views. I am one of your co-hosts, Dr. Karen Lewis. With me is my one co-host, Dr. Roger Welton. And we're both practicing veterinarians. I am in the St. Louis area. He's in Florida. And today we're going to talk about a fun issue with a reader response. But first of all, Roger, how have you been? It's actually not been that long this time since we talked.
No, it hasn't. It hasn't. And I'm glad we're being true to our word and staying connected more often. And I really hope we stick to this. But really cool that this lady, Christy from Madison, Wisconsin. Madison's a pretty big place, so we don't do last names for listeners. But Christy from Madison, Wisconsin, you inspired an entire episode. We couldn't just do this as like, you know, let's do some mail and then we'll get into our topics. Like, this is a topic in and of itself. So why don't you elaborate on, actually, why don't you read it there, Dr. Karen?
Oh, sure. Okay. So let's see. It starts with, well, I have to start with the flattery, too. So I'm just going to read the whole thing.
No, include the flattery, please.
Yeah, these are egos.
Oh, my goodness. Thank you, Christy.
I know. We need that. Thank you. So it says, to start, I wanted to say that I thoroughly enjoyed your podcast a few weeks ago regarding TNR. And TNR is trapped and release. I'll decode that for you. It really brought out a lot of good points from both positions and really got me to think about the topic and reconsider my feelings about it. So thank you. You're welcome.
You are welcome.
Secondly, I wanted to ask a question about one of my cats. I have a 3-year-old male cat who, beyond his eating issues and some mild asthma, is happy and healthy. He is neutered, up to date on all shots. We use Revolution monthly, year-round, and since we often house foster puppies and kittens. So, on to his issues. My cat is always starving and will eat everything and anything, to the point where our food pantry must have child-proof locks on it. Wow.
That's incredible.
I know. He's talented. Get that on YouTube. Anyway, he has eaten everything from raw potatoes to granola bars. He first opened the box and then ate the wrapper off the granola bar. So I'm just becoming more and more impressed by this cat the more I read.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
So he eats his cat food so quickly that he sometimes vomits, then eats the vomit, of course. He's clean. Furthermore, we've been to the vet in emergency situations at least 3 times because he eats something he can't pass. For example, he's eaten toxic amounts of garlic, and this last time he got into the garbage and ate a huge portion of plastic wrap that had been covering a sandwich. Nutrition label and all. Well, for the fiber, maybe. So, for the past 2 or so years, we've been working with our vet to try and find something that will satisfy my cat. Our first step was blood work. Everything was perfect. Since then, we've tried tons of different food and feeding regimens. Low-calorie, higher feeding amounts. High-calorie, lower feeding amounts. Food twice a day, food 3 times a day, the list goes on and on. Nothing seemed to make even the smallest of differences. Last time we were at the vet, she thought maybe it was an attention-seeking behavior issue. He has plenty of toys, we play with him every day, but his food obsession continues. I'm wondering if either of you have any ideas. I'm willing to try anything to help my cat. Not only is his behavior terribly hard to live with on a daily basis, but I am concerned for his health and his happiness. Any ideas or things that might be worth trying would be much appreciated. So, this was just interesting, and Christy, unfortunately, I have 2 big questions. The first 2 things, and Dr. Rogers said the same thing, that popped in my mind that were not answered in your email were, is your cat fat or skinny? Because that's a huge, you know, it gets it sticking in 2 different directions, and is his poop solid or squishy? So those are my 2 first questions. What were your initial thoughts, Dr. Roger?
Well, I mean, I think that their brains are a more primitive version of ours, really, in the end, right? I mean, they don't have quite the same cognitive reasoning ability, but they do suffer from some psychological problems. I mean, we see it all the time. You prescribe amitriptyline, which is like a kitty Prozac, occasionally, right, for various behavioral disorders. I mean, some of them have issues, and I think she said issues, quote-unquote, in the email. And so I think because we can't sit the kitty on a couch and have a conversation with him, we have to rule out all medical problems first. And I think your 2 questions are great. I mean, yes, is the poop squishy? Because that could indicate an intestinal issue, and we could get into that in a couple of minutes. Is he fat or skinny? Because if he's skinny, that could mean an endocrine issue. Of course, blood work was run, but I would like to start by saying this could be a bona fide psychological problem, and maybe something like an amitriptyline, once we've ruled everything out and we can discuss how and when we do that, that's something to take a look at. There's a condition in people where they actually eat everything in sight, including inanimate objects. Like, they'll grab this pencil. You see it? I'm showing it to you right now. Mm-hmm. And they'll eat it. It's called pica, isn't it?
Yes. And dogs and cats can have pica, too.
They can.
Yes. And I've actually... my parents have a rescued golden retriever from a puppy mill, and under anxiety conditions, we were just talking about thunderstorms before we started our podcast, she actually gets pica when she's stressed, and she will eat anything that is put in front of her.
Sure.
I mean, anything. It's just, she's just like, I don't, like, fur balls from the floor, which don't judge me, I might need to vacuum more often, you know, like, shoes, toys, like, you have to, like, oh my God, clear the house out. So, yeah, but that's only in certain situations. It's not all the time, like it sounds like it is with this cat.
It's especially unusual with cats, right? I mean, I think every Labrador has some form of pica.
Yes.
So, you know, when we're talking about cats, especially the toxic levels of garlic, what cat does that? There's something crazy going on here. So let's start with, since it was your idea, the squishy poop.
Okay.
You love talking about poop, by the way.
I do, and I like to say squishy. It's just fun. And I ask my clients this all the time when they're telling me my dog or cat is hungry all the time, and I'm like, poop, firm or squishy? And they're always like, huh. So, and here's why I care. Here's why it's actually a really big, big deal. So if the poop is firm, then that most likely means that the food, whatever objects in this case, are being absorbed by the intestines in an appropriate manner. If the poop is squishy or loose all the time, I'm not talking, you know, he ate something once and got squishy poop from that episode, but I'm talking like consistently squishy or even watery, that actually points to an underlying malabsorptive issue, meaning the food just kind of goes blazing through the intestines and does not get absorbed. So you have a cat who honestly is truly starving because he can eat all he wants, but if the body is not absorbing it, his body isn't getting it, so he just needs to keep eating, keep eating, keep eating. So we were talking about a few diseases before the podcast that can cause that. One of those I don't see in cats, but I see it in dogs, and it's called EPI, and it stands for exocrine pancreatic insufficiency. Long story short, basically, the pancreas is supposed to secrete enzymes that help digest and absorb the food you eat. And when that's not being absorbed and the pancreas is not secreting these enzymes, you have just watery blowout poop. I mean, like, I'm guessing you don't have that because that would have been definitely mentioned.
I'm thinking it would have been mentioned.
Yeah, it's like spraying the walls, you know.
If I may interject for a moment, I've seen the blood, I've seen that too. But have you ever seen the, and again, I've never seen it in a cat either. I imagine eventually we'll see it in a cat. There is a test for feline EPI. So if there's a test for it, it must occur every now and then, right? I mean,
yes.
Okay. So I've tested for it in felines before, but I've seen cases in dogs, mind you, where they just have exceptionally humongous poop of EPI, and they have EPI, right? So that's the other presentation is poop is firm, but it's like elephant doo-doo.
Yeah, and it's like bigger than the cat or the dog. You know? Yeah, and you're like, how did that come out of you? Yes.
Yeah. So that's another thing I'd want to ask her too is the poop enormous? You know?
Yes.
So,
and the other malabsorptive disease we kind of kicked around was more common, and that's, in people they call it IBD or IBS, irritable bowel disease or irritable bowel syndrome. And in cats, they have a similar type syndrome. Again, the lining of the intestines is not quite right, so nutrients and food don't get absorbed. There are really good tests for that. And you mentioned that blood work was done. There's a test that can be done. Texas A&M is who I use. Texas A&M is kind of the national authority on gastrointestinal type diseases. Is that who you use too, Dr. Roger?
Yes. For GI stuff, yes.
Yes, they actually have, it's called the GI lab.
Yeah, and actually you'll send stuff through a general lab that they'll redirect to Texas A&M too.
So, yes.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah. So if I would actually see if blood work, because it's a very specific panel, like your cat has to be fasted for 12 hours. It's a pain. You know, it's not just you go to the vet and draw blood, have a nice day. So, but that can actually rule IBD in or out, which is really helpful. And it can also test for the pancreatic disease like we talked about too. So that would be definitely a good thing to start. If IBD is not ruled out, my next step is actually intestinal biopsies. which often requires referral. So do you have a scope at your practice, Dr. Roger?
No, I don't, but, okay. I'm actually a bigger fan, rather than do mucosal, endoscopic biopsies. So let's talk about, let's kind of elaborate on that a little bit. So endoscopy, you get a scope that it goes down the throat and it goes down the esophagus into the stomach, and you can get to the proximal or upper small intestine. You can take biopsies of all these structures. Then you go up the other end and you do a colonoscopy, and you can do most of the colon as far as the lower part of the small intestine. I think not the only, but one of the big limitations with that is you do miss all that center, area of jejunum, a lot of the duodenum. A lot is missed, so I've actually gravitated towards just doing abdominal exploratory surgery, actually having the bowel in my hands and taking multiple biopsies. And I found it's, for me, diagnostically better. I've diagnosed.
Actually, I did that too, actually.
What's
so,
that?
Yes, I do that too. I agree. I biopsy them myself and open them up.
Yeah, and how many times have you, you're sure you have, a lymphoma? Because we see gastrointestinal lymphoma. And this, I don't believe, is a lymphoma case. It's a young cat. Yeah. But let's say this was an older cat. Of course, your lymphoma radar's up, right? Mm-hmm. How many times have you sure it's lymphoma, you're positive it's lymphoma, you refer them for scoping? Yes, it is less invasive, but comes back not lymphoma. Yet, since I've just gone to listen, by the time you factor in the cost, the recovery's not that bad. I've diagnosed so much more lymphoma, which in a cat, you diagnose that, you got 18 to 24 month remission rates for some of these, presentations. It's so I've done a lot more of it. So, I mean, I can understand the pros and cons of both, but so you do like to biopsy me as well?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because when you're doing a scope, basically, it's a camera on the end of a tube that you take down and down their throat into their intestines, and you're just kind of pinching off little pieces of intestine. And you're getting just those top two or three layers of cells, which sounds like a lot, but a lot of times these diseases are in that fourth and fifth layer that the scope little pinchy doesn't get. So that's why when you just take a what we call full thickness, which means all the way through all the layers, that's when you'll really get the diagnosis. So and that, in the case of any cat who is chronically hungry and or has chronic squishy poop, that's often a very good thing, because you can diagnose irritable bowel disease. You can, if it's an older cat, like retrocyclic lymphoma is high on our list. And you cannot tell by ultrasound. You cannot tell by x-ray. You've got to cut it and send it to the lab, and then they tell you. So that might actually be a good thing to do. And the good news is, lymphoma, like Dr. Roger said, is treatable. IBD, very treatable.
Sure.
So it's, you want to know, because it's, you can manage it, some just with prescription food, some with a medication, some with both.
No, absolutely. I think that's a great, great plan, potentially. I guess there's maybe a few things we could do beforehand. So I would assume that if, this doctor's probably understands that, endocrine disease could be playing a role here. So they would do the blood work that would cover that, which would include a thyroid. And I have actually seen hyperthyroid disease, which is overactive thyroid. I've seen it in younger cats, than I would have expected. How old is this kitty again?
Three.
Yeah, that would be pretty young. I think the youngest I've seen it was 4.5. But still, it's, you want to get that thyroid level on the blood work. I would assume this doctor did that. And of course, the other thing would be to look at the blood glucose, which is in any blood chemistry profile, and check for diabetes. So I think we could assume that's been ruled out, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
I would
ruled out endocrine disease. Let's assume that. We kind of touched on this earlier. My associate kind of got me at this a few years ago. When he cannot pinpoint a cause for weight loss or ill thrift, or even chronic loose stools, before he'll go for the surgical biopsies necessarily, he'll just do a massive deworming, because not any parasite checking assays are 100%. They do miss things, right? So, I would just do a massive deworming. There's a product that I love called Drontol Plus that covers basically everything you could think of. And you had mentioned Dr. Karen Panicure also earlier, which tends to get not just all the common ones, but the weird ones too.
Yeah, it gets the weird lungworm and like worms that you learn about in vet school and never ever see. You know, it gets those. And there's a new product. I don't know. Do you carry a Profender, Dr. Roger, in your practice?
I do not. Tell me about it.
Oh, I love it. So Dronal Plus is a great dewormer, and it is horse pills. you have this cat, and you're like, yeah, trying to get this pill and this cat. And so when Profender came out, I like literally did a cartwheel because it is a topical liquid. It covers the same spectrum as Dronal Plus, but you put it on like a flea, like a liquid on their skin. Wow. So I got so tired of cramming these horse pills on this cat's throat, I was like, oh my God, I dropped these drops on their back and they're dewormed.
Yeah.
Where's this been all my life? So.
And that gets your tapeworms too?
Yeah. I use it for tapeworms all the time, and they're both same efficacy. And now the Dronal Plus does have a flavored tablet. So if the cat digs that, that's cool. But I just got sick of trying to pill these cats who didn't want it. So I'm like, here's your liquid. Have a nice day.
Yeah. No, I'll have to look into that. That sounds wonderful.
Streaming.
So maybe that plus of course a cat panicure. So Profender, you said, is that what it's called? Mm-hmm. Profender
yes.
Panicure combination. You know, just try an empirical treatment with that. And empirical treatment kind of refers to diagnosis by treatment. We do that quite a bit in veterinary medicine.
Oh yes. If you clean the house and your cat gets better, clean the house metaphorically by cleaning parasites out, you know. I always tell people first clean the house and then ask questions, you know? Yeah. And if his behavior improves. But also one thing, Dr. Roger, I just thought of this. You know, old habits die hard. Yeah. If he's been like this for years, it might just be like a sport for him. You know? I mean, even if he's not truly hungry anymore, he might be like, oh, it's something fun to do, you know, which I know her vet touched on that it could be a behavioral thing. And cats are weird.
They're such interesting. Yeah, they're so sensitive. Yeah, you just don't. You know, that's why it's so challenging. Like, you're presented with the cat just doing bad things or weird things, and you're like, okay, well, what's the plethora of things that could be wrong with this kitty that can lead to this? You know, and you're sifting through this diagnostic purgatory with your client, and it gets frustrating. And it looks like a lot has been tried. So I mean, for me, step one would be treating with, let's go with Profender since it sounds a lot easier to administer than Drontal. And Panicure is a liquid, so that should be pretty easy. And you only do 5-day course of it. And then if that doesn't work, another thing I consider, I don't know if it's been done here. You said you've tried all kinds of diets. I wonder if you've ever tried, and it's not specified here, but a hypoallergenic diet.
You took the words right out of my mouth.
I did.
That's crazy.
Oh,
yes.
My goodness. We've been doing this too long. All right. So, well, since I took the words out of your mouth, I'm not going to steal your thunder. Go ahead. Elaborate.
No. Just because, like I mentioned, IBD, IBS before, the treatment of that is one of the hallmarks is a hypoallergenic diet. And there also can't food allergies in cats most often present in like itchy skin, scabby, scurfy stuff on the skin, but it can present as intestinal malabsorption as well. And I have some people who are like, you know what, I can't afford the blood test at Texas A&M. It's $200 usually. You know, I can't afford the biopsies for my cat. So I tell them, you know what, let's pretend we biopsied your cat, and let's pretend that it came back with IBD, and let's treat it for IBD for a month. And God dang it, if your cat gets better, everybody wins, you know, and I have several owners who have done that. So basically, hypoallergenic food is one of the things we do. There's other medications we can add along to that. I personally like to change one variable at a time so we know what's working and what is not. But I have several owners who are like, hey, that works for me, you know, and do you ever do that too, Roger?
Absolutely, and you gotta buy food for the kitty anyway, and a lot of food for this kitty, apparently.
Yeah.
So I'm all about that because, you know, as veterinarians, it's not our job to judge. You know, we just got to sit back and, okay, here's our plan A. Okay, you can't do plan A, so plan B. And then there's a C and a D. I totally agree. And I agree with that. It's a great statement you made. Don't change too many variables at once. You know, try one thing, give it a little time, doesn't work, try it again. And we just happened to have done, not too long ago, an entire episode on hypoallergenic food trials. Or just food trials general.
Yeah, and how not to screw them up.
And how not to screw them up, because they are not easy. I would strongly advise, if you're going to go down that path, listen to that episode.
Yeah. Well, especially with this cat, that would be a big challenge, because the hallmark of a hypoallergenic food trial is the cat has to eat that food or dog, that food and only that food, like one Cheerio, one Pringle, one garlic clove in his case, you know, whatever.
Garlic clove.
You know, we'll
raw potato.
Just, yeah, exactly. Well, actually, raw potatoes might not be so bad.
Potato would be okay, actually. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, couldn't think of it. But anyway, but you know, I mean, one of those, and your food trial is back to square one. So, I mean, he might have to be like in a kiddie straitjacket. I don't know. Just try to get the food trial.
Give him his own room, at least. And food trials, you know, you like the 12-week, I'm an 8-week. And the literature says 8 to 12 weeks. So, you know, you're talking at least 8 weeks of that, committing to that. But it's certainly something to try versus if you're not ready to jump into a surgical exploratory procedure.
Yeah, and the worst thing that happens is it doesn't work and you wasted your money on some overpriced food.
Right, there you go.
You know, like you got nothing to lose.
Yeah, I agree. And I like the one, it always escapes me. It's Royal Canin. The canine version is called Ultimino. The feline version is called
Feline Ultimino. I don't know.
It's not called, they don't, for some reason on the felines, it's the same concept, same diet, only, you know, nutritionally balanced for a cat, but I think it's just called hydrolyzed. Basically, what they're doing is they're cutting the protein from very large protein chains into little tiny protein chains called peptides that are unreactive. They get absorbed. They give the kitty the protein that he or she needs, and they don't react with the gut. But the exact name escapes me. So just ask your vet, the feline version of Royal Canin Ultimino.
Or any hypoallergenic diet, whatever they carry. If they carry Purina, if they carry Hill's Science Diet, they're all good. They all have their...
Yeah,
and
not,
honestly, with cats, I'm like, whatever the heck your cat will eat.
That's
although
a good
in this
point.
Case,
we're
he's
good
not
here.
Good.
We're good here on this one. But no, that's true. I will say, I don't think the others work as well. I think that, in my experience, it's been the best for both species. And maybe I've just gotten lucky and those particular clients have complied better. Or had a less naughty pet. That
I don't know.
You know, who knows? It's so multifactorial because you send them on their way with the bag of food, and Lord knows what happens at home. You know.
Well, I have an unfair advantage because I'm a house call vet, and so I mean I work in clinics sometimes too. But I go to the house and I'll see like, oh my gosh! I had one client. It was a dog. She was considering doing a food trial for her dog because he just had chronic ear infections. And so we go there and how's the food trial? Oh, it's really good. He likes the food. His ears haven't improved. I always sit on the floor just because I want, you know, want the pet to be comfortable. And so, and then she, I was next to this cabinet, like a TV stand kind of cabinet. And she said, "Yeah, open that cabinet." I'm like, "Oh boy, this is a loaded thing." Okay, so I open it. Like every brand and make of dog treat known to God was in this cabinet. Every flavor. She's like, yeah, well, he still gets all of those because that's his cabinet. I'm like, oh, Lordy. Okay. So you're not doing a food trial, you know? So I have that advantage of actually seeing these things. Oh, which in the clinic, they might not fess up to.
No, no. And I've actually had like the owner's kids say, that's not true. You do this.
Oh, I love when the kids have room for that.
You feed them popcorn when you're watching. You know, Sanford and Son, reruns or, you know, whatever it is. I don't know. No, it's so definitely. So covered a lot of, I think, is that pretty much all the health ones we could think of?
Pretty much. And then the other ones are psychological.
Psychological.
Point. And that would be if he's a fat cat, then I would be more inclined to the psychological angle. That's why I said my first question was twofold, fat or skinny, poop, squishy or solid, you know, because those are the two kind of deal breakers. If he's a fat cat, like I said, it could be a hobby, it could be a sport, it could be an OCD, who knows?
Right, and so OCD, and I have a little bit of OCD. I'll tell you about it in a second. I'm what you call a I'm a thumb picker. See, I pick my thumb.
Oh, wow, I'm a nail biter, so okay.
You're a nail biter, thumb picker. So OCD really is a repetitive behavior that one resorts to, in my case, thumb picking, in order to quell an underlying anxiety. You focus on the repetitive behavior, you feel less anxious. And dogs and cats, maybe worse than us, experience OCD. Luckily, mine's thumb picking. I got a hell of a callus here, though. I don't think you could see it through the camera.
It's better than thumb sucking.
Oh, my dog. Oh, we're trying to wean her. She's going to be sick soon. Won't let that up, but that's a whole other topic. All right, so let's say this is an OCD behavior or some form of pica. What would be the first thing you would do? You're this dog's veterinary, or I'm sorry, this dog's. first thing to do is figure out if it's a dog or cat.
Yes.
We've determined it's a cat. What would you do?
Oh, that's rough. Well, you can always go the drug route, which is, you know, the kitty cat Prozac, that type of thing, too. You can't have them lay on a couch and tell them all your deep, dark feelings, like we would like to do. But it might be worth, this is going to sound kind of crazy, but keeping a journal and logging, like, does he do this at a certain time of day? Does he do this when a certain person is home or not home? Is there another cat that is around or not around? I just, you know, like, try to gather as much evidence as you can. Mm-hmm. And so we can maybe try to establish a pattern was, oh, well, it's, think of it, it's when my husband leaves that he does this, you know, or when I run the vacuum, you know, I mean, anything like that. Just look for any and all evidence you can find, because sometimes if you can find any kind of a pattern, that would point to more of the psychological type behavior. What else would you do, Dr. Roger?
I think that's a phenomenal idea, and it wasn't my first go-to, but heck, I'm going to use that now. Thank you. I really like it.
Happy to help.
this is great. I feel like I'm in rounds with you sometimes. Like, oh, that's a heck of an idea. Yeah, I think it's great. But, I mean, think about the cat that had a bout of urinary tract disease. You cured it, yet it continues to pee outside the litter box. Why is it doing that? It's doing that because there's no longer urinary tract disease, but it's associated the litter box with the pain it felt when it was urinating. Don't want to use it anymore. You know, so their little brains work in very interesting ways. You know, of course, we get a UTI, and I've never had one, but I know people that have. They say, you urinate, it hurts. You don't blame it on the toilet, right? mean, you know, shame on you, toilet, you're hurting me. Curse you. No, it's we think there's something wrong with my, you know, genitalia, my urinary tract, whatever. Cat doesn't think that way. So, yes, could there be a trigger? I think that's a phenomenal thing to try to figure out. And I think journaling is a great way. Now, the question is, do we have the patience to find that trigger or triggers, multifactorial?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we don't know that. And could this kitty potentially intoxicate himself or suffer from a foreign body obstruction, you know, while we're trying to figure it out? And that's, you know, that's for the owner to see how patient she's willing to be with it. So, Christy, I think in large measure, that's up to you. I would, in this case, go right for the drugs. Reason being is that if this is behavioral, we've ruled out every possible medical problem with all the things we talked about. This is a deep-seated problem. I don't see feel-away helping this kitty.
No. But you know what? I think drugs can be multifactorial. I think feel-away could be one of the multiple things you do. It can't hurt, you know?
Oh, true. Yeah, and there's also the notion that, I mean, I love amitriptyline for cats. Well, it doesn't work overnight. So you can sort of do both things, right? I mean, it can mm-hmm. take as long as 60 days for maximum efficacy. So in that 60 days, you got a lot of time where you're treating this cat, and there may be zero response for a long time. 8 weeks is a long time when you're dealing with a behavioral disorder. So in that time, you could journal as well. So maybe start the two simultaneously. You know,
actually,
that's my final answer. I'm sticking to it.
I have a whole blog article I wrote. It was right before the 4th of July, about 4th of July anxiety, but this would apply to any anxiety. It gives all, we were just talking about this before the podcast, actually, all the great over-the-counter options that exist for dogs and cats that are anxious. And a lot of them aren't drugs, because a lot of people are like, ugh, drugs have side effects. You know, you worry about, you, and the whole stigma of I'm drugging my cat, you know.
Sure.
But a lot of these are more like protein supplements, like one's a milk protein, one's theanine, you know, and that actually had been clinically proven to help. And again, they can't hurt. What have you got to lose, you know? So, yeah, but at my blog article, it talks about anti-anxiety products for pets, but it might be worth checking out too and just see what you think is realistic for
and
you. And I love this for all anxious pets.
Please tell her where she'd find that article.
Oh, yeah. So my blog is vetchick.com. And it's a really pretty recent article, so I think the title is Help for Anxious Pets. You can either just search on the website for anxiety, and mm-hmm. it'll be the first article up. But it's a pretty, very thorough review of, like I said, many of them are even over-the-counter, so you don't even mm-hmm. need to get a prescription because they're not drugs, which makes a lot of people just makes them feel better. Hey, this isn't a heavy-duty drug,
mm-hmm.
you know. Also, I think another thing worth pointing out, Dr. Roger, is the means of delivery for the drug.
Oh, yes.
Pros and cons of oral medications in cats.
Oh my goodness. Certainly. I have a feeling this cat would probably be pretty easy to orally medicate.
Put it in a potato.
Yeah, put it in a potato and get to go. Oh my goodness. Right? I mean, that's incredible. So for me, I'm when it comes to amitriptyline, it's my go-to. I'm not a fan of transdermal, you know, rubbing on the skin.
Oh, interesting. I am.
You know, I had a discussion with my compounding pharmacist. Great, great couple. They're just phenomenal people. They do a lot of our animal medication compounding. And I asked them, I'm like, you know, is it my imagination that I seem to have more efficacy when somebody can pill their cat with amitriptyline or we do the oral suspension versus the transdermal? And they said no, because there's really been no studies on how well it absorbs. Now, on paper, theoretically, it should absorb just as effectively as any other transdermal out there. Are you aware of any studies that they're not privy to or I'm not privy to?
Oh, no. And that is any transdermal, I think. And by transdermal, we mean it's usually a cream that is rubbed on the ear that gets absorbed through the skin. And any transdermal, I think, has a question mark with it of how well is this being absorbed by this particular animal. Because I think there's a lot of individual variability, too. Mm-hmm. But most anxious cats I treat, I mean, if you can get a tuna-flavored liquid, by all means, do that if the cat loves it. My local compounding pharmacy, they've recently taken it up a notch, and they don't just have chicken flavor or beef flavor. They have chicken pot pie flavor and roasted Angus beef flavor. So I'm like, really, guys? It's chicken. But okay. whatever. So anyway, and if you can get that into your, you know, like squirt on some canned food, squirt in the mouth, whatever, cool, you know. But a lot of these people are like, anytime I try to put anything in this cat's mouth, you know, hello, we're doing an anti-anxiety medication, and then we're causing anxiety to get the medication in the cat. It's a little bit counterproductive. So
that's a very good point.
Like every time I touch the bottle, the cat hides under the bed. I'm like, okay, don't pull the cat up by its tail, you know, and then wonder why he's still stressed.
Sure. Yeah. And so this kitty, because he seems to like to eat things, maybe he'll get away with some oral and
just get the regular unflavored pill.
Yeah. Just toss it on the ground. There you go. Yeah. Munch that all up. So before we close here, let's talk about how amitriptyline works and why it works. So, because a lot of people, you know, you talk about, you make it analogous to a kitty Prozac, and you know, they instantly think I'm going to have a dopey zombie cat walking around, and it's really not the case. It's not sedative. At least it's not the intention of the drug. And it's also, if there is any little bit of sedation, it's only in the first few days. They're just kind of a little subdued, but they're not walking around like, you know, the Walking Dead, you know? So would you like to begin the discussion of
how? Well, actually, I have a unique way of doing all of my anti-anxiety medications.
Tell me about it.
I start out, and actually I did this with gabapentin, which is the pain medication too. Mm-hmm. I start out low, and I have you give the medication, if it's a twice a day medication, just once a day, just at bedtime. Because you know what? If it makes your pet sleepy, who cares? You know, that's the goal. So a lot of these pets I'll do for the first 5 days, once a day at night, just, and it lets their body kind of acclimate to the medication, you know. Mm-hmm. That way when you do go to twice a day, or if you want to move to the morning, you don't have that initial period of, oh, he's a little sleepy, he's a little stoned, because that happened while he was sleeping. Mm-hmm. So you're good.
Yeah.
So that way you can go to twice a day, and I found, especially with, I love gabapentin as a pain medication, owners love it when they're like, yeah, you know, he was sleeping the first couple days, but we let his body acclimate. Now he's on twice a day and he's doing fantastic. Same with the anti-anxiety meds.
Good point. And so amitriptyline to me is a, you know, it used to be early on when I graduated a once a day, more commonly. Now more commonly it's a twice a day. Use it a twice a day.
I use it both. And actually, I'm a fluoxetine girl.
Oh, so you like the generic Prozac?
Yeah.
Okay.
So don't judge me.
For cats too? No, yeah, I mean, it's an ism. You know, I mean, it's personal preference. They're both very similar.
And there's also a third one, clomipramine. People might have heard their vet talk about that. That's that actually has an FDA label for separation anxiety in dogs. And the fluoxetine had an FDA label for, also actually, it was called Reconcile at the time, of separation anxiety in dogs. So because those carry the FDA label, I tend to migrate more towards those, actually, the generic form of them.
Is that Clomacom?
Clomacom is clomipramine.
Okay, so that's just another, okay.
Yep,
so that's gone. Name. That's gone generic?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so I'm so old that drug has gone generic. Because when I that was like the newest and greatest thing when I first graduated.
It was,
you know,
cutting edge.
Yeah,
yes.
I was like, wow. And it was expensive as heck. And now it's generic. Boy, I'm getting
old. Still not that cheap, though. I don't know. You'd think it would be, but Yeah, maybe it's gone down since I shopped it a year or two ago, but I was still like, oof, I'll just do the Prozac. It's a fraction of the price.
Yeah, so I mean, and so for that reason, and early on, I didn't have great experience with it, and it made some dogs aggressive. Any of these drugs can make a dog aggressive, you know, unfortunately. I know we're talking about a cat, little tail.
And it's not making them aggressive, let's clarify. It's lowering their inhibitions.
It's
not going to take a nice dog and make them aggressive. It's going to take a dog with aggressive tendencies, and like, I have a dog like that, and it made him more of a jerk.
Right.
So
it lowers inhibitions. Yeah. It's like kind of gives them little beer muscles, you know?
Yeah.
So I found that happen a little bit more commonly, but you know, every veterinarian has their preference, and I don't see anything wrong with fluoxetine. I mean, I like it too. They're both tricyclics.
Drugs. Yes.
What's that?
Same family of drugs.
Yeah. So basically what they're doing is they're inhibiting an enzyme that takes up serotonin. So serotonin is a neurotransmitter. It's a little hormone that kind of travels through the brain, and it's involved during times of contentment. So we're laughing. I'm talking to Dr. Karen, having a blast. I'm at the movies laughing. I'm having a great meal. Serotonin is pulsing through my brain, but you can't live life like that, can you? I mean, you can't always be floating your way through life. So there's an enzyme that takes it back up. Well, some animals and some people need a little bit more serotonin than your average animal or person. So we inhibit that enzyme a little bit, so a little bit more serotonin stays out there. You got a similar take on that? Is that kind of?
Yeah, and I think that's a very good explanation. It's not a sedative. It's, you know what I mean? A lot of people think, oh, this is a sedative. But no, it just takes the chemical in your brain that goes from one little nerve synapse to the next and basically makes that chemical last longer.
Sure.
Is what it does. Yeah. So.
And that's involved in runner's high. I know you're a person that trains quite a bit. I mean, after you train, how do you feel? You feel wonderful.
Oh, yeah. If I'm sad, I'll go run 5K, and then I feel better. Yes. Yeah.
Lowers your cortisol, your stress hormones, which in turn enables the raising of that serotonin. So, you know, if I don't train, I can't sleep. I'm ornery. You don't want to be around
me. You're always ornery. No.
Now, luckily, I trained today, so it's all good. I'm in a great mood. And whenever I'm going to podcast, I train every day. But yeah, that's the bottom line. And that's another thing too is, let's go to the training. Let's give this kitty some stuff to do. Let's get some laser pointers. I got this great, my son loves it. We have three cats. And so he's got this, fishing reel, and he can cast it out, and it's got a little felt fish on the end of it, and he reels it in, and the cats are all chasing it, and he, you know, casts it out again and reels it in. I mean, these cats could do it all day long. So find the thing he likes and get him lots of toys, lots of stuff to occupy his brain. Make him active. Get the angst out of him. Again, if we determine it's psychological.
And actually, if he's a fat kitty, I had a client, she has two overweight cats, and she actually bought, I cannot believe they made this, but I actually have seen it and witnessed it. It looks like a giant hamster wheel, but it's for cats.
Nice.
She's having trouble getting her cats on it. She emailed me the website and was like, I'm buying this. It's like 4 feet tall. Okay. It's just this monstrosity. And so I came over to her house and she showed me this. She's like, it's bigger than it looked online. I was like, well,
that's great.
It's hilarious. Anyway, but this cat, if he's this food motivated, which obviously he is, you could probably train him to do a lot of things that most cats wouldn't do simply because he's so food motivated.
Sure. Just hang a potato right there. Just right in front of him.
Yeah. Just take it so he can get creative, you know. Maybe the hamster wheel isn't for him. But just, you know, think outside the box of little things that you're like, wow, well, that might be hard to get a cat to do. If this dude wants food that bad, he might actually do some pretty crazy things for it.
So you know, my wife is one of those crazy Amazon shoppers. God forbid I go out and buy something and come home with it. Actually, it happened today. I got my son a hermit crab. And I came home with the hermit crab set and whatever. She's like, that's not big enough, because she gave me the lecture that hermit crabs are social animals and that they actually need to have a couple of them. And that tank's not nearly big enough for that. And you didn't do your proper research. And I could have gotten a nice 10-gallon perfect set on Amazon. So I'm going to have my wife go on Amazon and find this giant hamster wheel.
Yeah, I don't know if it's on Amazon or not. I forget what it's called, but... Oh, my gosh. Yeah, you'll know when you see it. Trust me. There's only one giant cat.
I love it. I didn't know it existed. That's so cool.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, and you have to assemble it. And the funny thing is, this client, she's about 4'11" herself.
Oh, nice.
So her standing next to
it too?
I know. She could probably fit it. And she's like, it's almost as tall as me.
Awesome.
I mean, it is.
That is whoever so cool.
can find it, if anybody can actually get that and get their cat on it, I would love to see that video.
You know what? So. I'm gonna do it. I actually have one chubby cat. We've gotten a lot of weight off of him, but he's just it's not easy. I think that could take him to the next level. He's got like another 3 pounds to go. You know, I'm doing it, and I think he's just dumb enough to do it too. He's not a very bright cat. Perfect. Well, wow, what a great topic. That was really fun. I'm sorry we're having fun with, you know, Christy, what is a very legitimate problem. I do feel for you, as does, I know, my colleague here, Dr. Karen, who's one of the kindest people I've had the pleasure to meet. And we hope that, you know, this helps you sift through this. And please keep in touch and let us know how things pan out. Any final parting words, Dr. Karen?
No, actually, I just because it was bothering me, I looked up the cat hamster wheel, and it's called it's bothering me, and it's called
OneFastCat.com or just one.
I guess the brand is OneFastCat. So anyway, yes, I think it is OneFastCat.com. Okay. They should like pay me for endorsements, but this sucker is like $250. So
yeah, you know who else should pay us? Royal Canin. Whoever makes generic amitriptyline.
Yes, no kidding.
You know, all the stuff we talk about, but we don't get a check for anything. We just do this for fun. Well, it's been a pleasure. Let's connect again soon. I know there's a very loyal listener by the name of Giovanna. She's got an email question for us that we will address next episode. Giovanna, we haven't forgotten about you. This one email, though, it was so much to talk about. We just could not do it and then do an episode without it being 3 hours long. I mean, we're already almost 45 minutes in.
Well, and the overeating cat topic, it was worth making a whole episode out of because it's such a common problem.
It is.
Not the degree that maybe she has, but a lot of people, I think, can sympathize and be like, yes, my cat wants to do this too, you know? So that's why it was a great question.
Sure. Absolutely. So thank you very much. Thank you very much for listening again, as always. Any parting words for our listeners there, Doc?
Nope. Thanks for putting up with us one more night.
It's too much fun. Good night, everybody.
Thanks, guys.